so that others feel insecure around you. You can't serve the world by staying small. So you can see what sometimes happens. You know, we make ourselves content staying small just in like another comfort zone so that we don't kind of come into people's eyes and attention. And also, you know, I think contentment is almost the opposite to jealousy, but there must be some connection here also. You know, often, the antidote, in a way, to jealousy is being content. And again, you know, Daddy Janki once said that the root cause of jealousy, what do you think it might be? What would you say? Comparison? Insecurity? Laziness. Interesting. The root cause of jealousy, she said, is laziness. Laziness is what she said. And it's very deep because she was saying, like a gardener, you know, I mean, the person next door to someone who has a beautiful garden, he could be jealous of that garden. But actually, he could make a beautiful garden if he worked hard. But instead, he's just jealous of the other one's garden. And then I said to Daddy, I said, but some of us are not good gardeners. No matter how much we try, we wouldn't make a good garden. And she said, but still, we all have some ability, some talent, some speciality. And if we were busy working on that, then we wouldn't be looking what others are achieving. Isn't it right? If we're busy working on our own speciality, then we'll be happy with ours, we'll be happy seeing theirs, we won't be jealous. So it's a very interesting thing to think about the connection between jealousy and laziness. But I think also often jealousy means that we have more potential. You know, we're often jealous because other people are attaining something, and I think I can also attain that, but instead of doing the work, I just look and compare and get jealous. But it kind of, I think it's a bit of an indicator that there's more potential in me. So if we, you know, kind of just be aware of that laziness in regard to contentment, because this is that complacency. It's also kind of a laziness. But there's another reason why also we get blocked, and that is fear of ego, fear of desires. You know, we don't want to have ego, so we don't put ourselves forward because we think, well, it's ego. You know, so we're often afraid of that. But we need to step forward and manage our ego. That's what this journey is about. It's not being afraid of anything. So managing our ego and managing, you know, our fears. Because also when we put ourselves forward, we're going to have to face a lot of things, not just other people, but maybe speaking on a stage or, you know, many things that are maybe beyond what we feel comfortable with. Do you actually know anyone who is perfectly content? Just think about it. Just think. Do you know anyone who's perfectly content? Besides Baba. He's not in the race. So when you're thinking of that person, maybe somebody seems perfectly content, but just be aware, are they content over a long period of time? Are they content just because at the moment circumstances are good? You're perfectly content, or you know someone? Daddy Janky's perfectly content. Yeah, she's pretty close to that. And also when you think of that person who's content, would you be content with that status quo? You know, would you be content with being in that situation? Because one of the meaning of contentment is actually content, right? When we're filled our content, we will be content. And so Baba has said that contentment is perfection. Until we've completely fulfilled our potential, we can't really be content. We're not full. But to be able to fill that content, we also have to do some work of emptying out the rubbish, the old content, which is not us, the false content. You know, we've filled ourselves with pride and all these things to protect ourselves, but that's not who we are at all. So we have to empty before we can fill ourselves.
How do we get clear on what our personal potential is?
Yeah, we'll come to that. Yeah. So when we think about what it requires really to be content, what kind of qualities come to your mind? You can't be content if you're in any way anxious, worried. You can't be content when there's desires. You know, I mean, it takes faith, complete faith, to be content. When you start thinking about all the things that would fill that vessel of contentment, it's quite a lot. So that's why I'm finding it hard to think of anyone who I would say is perfectly content. There are some people who are very content, but I wouldn't be content with what they've got, you know, like with where they're at. Like there's someone I was thinking who is very content, but I feel a little bit staid, you know, like, but nothing wrong with the person, you know, but I would like, you know, things to be different in my world if, you know, for me to be content. And that's why it's also, you know, we're content when we're full. And our fullness is all different. Someone might be content at this and somebody won't be content with this. There's still more to fill in. Like somebody might be content just to be peaceful and to have a comfortable life. And then others are not content unless everyone is okay. So, you know, there's a different content level, and our perfection's always all different also. We're not all going to be perfect in the same way because our content is different. Even what makes up me is different than what makes up you. It's just like, you know, all the plants grow out of the same soil. But isn't it amazing that they all draw different things? Some draw up the vitamin C and you get vitamin C. Some vitamin A. How do they do that? You know, it's quite amazing, though, that kind of potential in a seed to draw out vitamin C and produce vitamin C for us. How does that work? I'm quite amazed at this. But it's the same with us. We all have a potential to draw from life different things. And so we've all got a different kind of flavor, something different to add to this wonderful variety drama. And it's one thing that I learned very early on in my Brahmin life, because I went on a bus trip with the Madhuban Nawasis, and, you know, I was maybe 2 or 3 years in Gyan. And one of the sisters, actually little Mohini from Madhuban, she was young, much younger then, but she stood on the seat, held on to the rail of the bus, and started to sing to everyone. You know, very extrovert, really, if you wanted to, you know. And I thought, because I was a new Brahmin, I thought, you know, if somebody had done this, you know, in Australia, where I was from, we would have thought, that's very extrovert, that's not very yogi. You know, we would have judged it. But I saw all the Madhavan Nuasis just enjoy her. And it was such a lesson, because I thought, you know, we're often so stereotyped of what that content should be. You know, we have like a stereotype of that. And it was a really good lesson just to see everyone enjoy her. No, I didn't see any judgment on anyone's face or any kind of, oh, she shouldn't be doing like that, that's not yogi. And then in Madhavan, we had one brother. He just left the body a few years ago. And he used to do the mail. He was the postman at Pandav Bhavan. I don't know if you remember him, but he always wore a uniform, like an army uniform. That was him. He wore an army uniform, and he just did that. And nobody told him not to wear it. Maybe they did, but he wore it for 30 years, doing the postman's job. You know, there's another brother, I think you know, the gardener. He's got a very long beard, and he stayed in silence, absolute silence, I think, for 3 years. And he was accommodated. You know, what's so wonderful is that people are allowed, they're permitted to be themselves. They do their job, and they just are given this space to be themselves. And so often we don't give ourselves that space. We don't give others that space. We become judgmental. You know, but this is what I learned very early on. And you just could never compare even the three daddies, Daddy Gulzar, Daddy Janki, and Daddy Ratan Mohini, or before it was Daddy Prakash Mani. You can't compare them. You could not compare them, because they're absolutely different. And it's not that one is better or, you know, I think it must be like comparing art. I'm not much of an art critic, but how do you compare still life with abstract, with something else? You know, it's just a completely different makeup. And so this question of being myself that Casey was raising, you know, this thing, how do I know my full potential? I think it's a very interesting question to ask. But I as we go along this journey and let go of fear, I think we allow it to emerge. You know, and one of the things I was saying is another fear besides ego and being knocked down and all the things. There's so many fears along our journey. But one of the fears also is to really be who I am and to even have, in a sense, desire. We've got a fear of desire also on the spiritual path, because we've always heard desires are bad. And yet, you know, there's another way of thinking about it and to see it, that a healthy person, a healthy mind, would create desires that would bring happiness. There are such desires that bring happiness. And so some people, you know, in the management field call that intention rather than desire, because desire's got a bad connotation, hasn't it? Hasn't it? Very bad connotation. But intention. And what somebody was writing is that when we know our intention, then all the small desires, which are really the distractions of our life, fall away. It's like when we came to Baba, we kind of felt that we found what we were looking for. And so most of us didn't care to become vegetarian or, you know, get up at 4 o'clock, renounce our warm bed so early in the morning. I mean, look at all the little desires that just dropped away, right? They just dropped away quite easily because we kind of focused on a higher intention or desire. So in that sense also, when, you know, we're fulfilling our potential, we actually let go of a lot of desires. Rather than desires being wrong, they're often just filling a space that we don't know what to put there, isn't it? You know, if we don't know what we want, we fill our life with all these petty little things, even as a Brahmin, because we don't know what we want, so we have to kind of keep ourselves happy with something. But when we know what we want, then all these little things can just drop away. So in that sense, it's very important to know what our kind of destiny is. And I remember Anthony Phillips giving a very good model of this. He was showing a graph, right, like this. And it's like all of us have our line of destiny. You know, there's a destiny that's meant for each one of us. And what he was saying is when we're off our line, maybe because of pressure from family or society or our own fears, when we're off our line, where we should be and where we are, this is the stress in our life. And that's a very interesting thing to see and to observe. When I'm on my line, it's like everything just goes like this. Like when you're in the right place at the right time, it's like magic. And I had that experience, especially I was in Hong Kong for 20-something years, and then I went back to Australia and was looking after one of the retreat centres for a few years. But I just felt at that time I was in the right place at the right time. And most of the time, I would say, most of the time, maybe 70% of the time, I felt excited. All the time I felt something's going to happen. But it was happening. Nothing was going to happen. It was like I felt like I was in a happening. You know, it was just a feeling of real joy and being alive. And I think this is also a very interesting word, because sometimes when we use this word content, we kind of, in a complacent way, we don't pursue life. And I think when, at least for me, when I'm engaged, when I'm interested, studying, practicing, experimenting, I feel so alive, you know, and it's not desire, it's being alive. and Baba's Muli, this Muli of contentment, has really awakened something in me of wanting to do more research on this topic of contentment. Because contentment is perfection. Contentment is to fill myself. It's the mother of all virtues. It's such a big thing, but it seems we're not that clear, you know, what it really is. And what I want to particularly pursue also in the next year, I don't know if you know, but I've been living in India for the last 2.5 years, just over 2 years, and I'm staying in the centres with the sisters. And actually the only people I can think of that I would describe as content are the small sisters in the centres. Because to me, and I've stayed in so many centres, and, you know, when I walk in, they don't know I'm there, I hear them laughing, and, you know, I see how they live. They've got nothing. Often they share 2 in one bed. And I think, where are their belongings? Because I don't see any cupboards, and, you know, they're really living such a simple, surrendered life. And yet I, so far, can only see a fulfillment, a happiness, you know? So I want to really go a bit deeper and see, is this really contentment? And how does it work? Because it's so different to my content, you know? Like it's so... I mean, they've got nothing. So I'm going to do a little bit more study on these sisters in the centres, because they're the only ones I can really see who are content. And they sign something when they, you know, surrender that says that they will go anywhere that they're told, they'll sleep where... You know, I've listened to that surrender kind of letter being read out to some of the sisters, and it was very touching, but it's also very challenging, you know, it's a real surrender. And yet, you know, there's so much, what I'm seeing, so much contentment in that. So contentment also is when we don't have attachment to what we think should be happening and the way things should be. That's a pretty big one for me. You know, because we so often feel things should be like this or like that, and they should do like this and not do like that. So this attachment to how we think things should be will never let us be content. So in the beginning, apparently, there was a picture of the cycle, and in the middle of that was an om. In the old picture of the cycle, in the middle was an om, which is me. And in that sense, that's quite a good image, because it's like I'm in the center, and there's 360 ways in which I can see, perceive this situation. One of them will work, right? Right? One of them. I can look at things in so many different ways, but there must be one way that is the wise and that will give me freedom, isn't it? Like, for example, I had a little bit of criticism, maybe criticism is the right word, about things not being done right, and I thought the seniors should correct it because they're responsible and they should correct it, right? Sounds reasonable in one sense. But then, you know, it's not up to me to dictate. You know, like sometimes Baba says, you even tell me what to do. You know, you even tell me how I should do things. But the angle that I found that freed me, because I was a bit stuck on that for a while, the angle that freed me was to think, well, actually somebody said this thing. They said, if God was to come on earth, this was a VK saying it, if God was to come on earth, would he try to fix hell or create heaven? What do you think? Fix hell or create heaven? Create heaven, right? It's a bit more obvious, isn't it? Because fixing hell, where do you even start? Where do you start to fix hell? He would create heaven. So I thought, yeah, the seniors are creating heaven. If they get caught up in fixing hell, it probably should get fixed. But where can they start? There's a lot of things that it's too much, you know, especially for our seniors that are probably looking after at least, you know, just a small seniors looking after, you know, 30 countries or 500 centers or something like that. You know, can you imagine them trying to fix hell? Would they have any time or energy left to create heaven? So that really helped me just to shift, and I was able to just come out of that. I thought, yeah, they don't have time to fix hell. They should be just creating heaven, you know, and could just get out of it. But I was stuck with that for a while because I didn't find the angle, you know, but there are 360 angles. And I'm sure there's always one that will free us and bring us back to our contentment, right? Because whenever I'm expecting something to be different, whenever I've got a little bit of a critical thought, then I can't be content. So I have to, you know, use this. And maybe that's also what Baba means, spin the cycle, you know, because it's really like another kind of a cycle that I can find my way through. So if we're able to find that right angle, then we can bring ourselves back into contentment. So when, you know, Baba was talking about contentment also the other day, he was saying not just to be content ourselves, but to make others content. Can you do that? Huh? Who's got that certificate? 100% certificate of contentment from others. Anyone? Not 100%. Actually, that's what Baba said, even in the Muli, he said 95%. Because he said, you know, actually he thought it should be more than 95% for Brahmins. But he said for teachers it will be, he gives them 5%. Because if anyone comes to a teacher and if two people come with a complaint, one's going to be discontent. Because they have to make a decision, you know. So in that sense, there will be some discontent. But I remember Charlie Bai meeting Baba. I think it was Charlie and Baba. He's a very loving soul and a very loved soul. And Baba said, don't worry. He said to him like this, don't worry. Even Baba can't satisfy everyone. It was very, very sweet. And it's true, because when we used to have those personal meetings, sometimes Baba used to speak 1 minute to someone and 10 minutes to someone else, and the one he only spoke 1 minute would be, he spoke longer to him than me, he doesn't care about me. I mean, that's the way it is. So we can't actually make others content, but it's nice to think of at least not making them discontent. We can eliminate a lot of that, you know, as much as possible. Because sometimes we don't even try. You know, we judge and maybe are rude or uncaring. You know, there's a lot of behavior that we can change to improve that contentment. So generally people should be content with me as an indicator that I'm, you know, kind of at least somewhere on the track. You know, if a lot of people are discontent, then obviously it seems I probably have to change something. Right? Don't you think? Because if a lot of people feel something, yeah, it's a sign that, you know, there's some self-correction that I can make. But, you know, it's not possible to please everyone. There's a very good story of this, just as an example. This man was given two ties, and the next morning he came out wearing one tie, and the wife said, why didn't you wear the other tie? Don't you like it? So there's that kind of thing that you just, people, you know, have their own mindsets, and you can't always please them. But generally we should be having that aim as much as possible to bring contentment in. But that is a very challenging thing, because of course what comes up with that is how much I need to compromise my principles, you know, my values, my, you know, there's a lot of things that I may have to, that I, you know, to make them content, I might have to compromise. But I have found that if I'm honest and myself, maybe in the short term, people are not so happy because, you know, you're not doing what they want. But I think in the long term, I found that I get accepted, you know. And when there's that honesty, like for example, even my mother, and father, because, you know, I was living in Hong Kong and I used to come to Madhuban every year and not go and visit them every year. And they'd say, why don't you come and visit us? And I'd say, I don't have enough money. And naturally they would feel, wouldn't they? Well, you've got enough money to go to India every year. Why don't you have enough money to come and visit us? And, you know, I used to write to them very honestly, like, I really feel the world is in a crisis and I'm trying to do what I can to develop myself so that I can do something about this situation, you know. And I said, you know, you're spending your money on your house, which they liked, you know, like, you know, people often do. They look at houses and they think how they can improve their house, and I'm spending money on, yeah, fixing another house, I feel. So we've all got our priorities, you know. I mean, it's challenging. And one time I thought, I went to Malaysia or somewhere for a retreat, and I thought, oh, I better not tell them I'm going there because they'll think, oh, now you're even going there and you don't come and see us. And I thought, no, I'm going to just be who I am, be honest, be open. If I start hiding anything, then what will happen to our relationship? You know, it won't help our relationship. And I thought, I am what I am. I think what I think. If I'm wrong or I'm right, it's what I think and it's where I'm at. And I found that over time they became more and more appreciative and respectful, not, you know, distanced. But I think if I'd gone the other route of kind of hiding things so that I don't upset them, I don't think it would have brought the relationship to where it actually arrived at, which was very good. I mean, not that it was ever not good, but just, you know, things that people think differently. So being honest, I think, will see us through a lot of those trying times of just having different priorities, different values, and so others not being content with how we're living our life, how we're spending our money, how we're, the choices that we're making. So we've just got another 15 minutes. Do you have any questions?
The question around how much do I need to compromise my principles? It seems like a very broad question. I still don't feel that I have
it. Yeah. How much do... Can I? How much do I need to compromise my principles? Depends how important or how significant maybe those principles are. Like, I wouldn't compromise being vegetarian, for example, because I, in my mind, it's a wrong action to kill an animal and to cause sorrow. So I couldn't compromise that. Not that I can imagine now after being vegetarian, being non-vegetarian, but I wouldn't compromise something that's like, you know, comes down to karma, you know, that comes down to like karma. But, you know, like sometimes we need to stay up very late and we compromise our quality of Amrit Vela, perhaps, things like that, to adjust to our families and to, you know, give and take a little bit. So I think there is some give and take that, you know.
So is it, yeah, I think it may be using Bhava Srimad to say, okay, am I in alignment with Srimad and may not compromise on your emotion?
Yeah.
Or fundamental
value. Yeah, so Srimad is really the core of that. Mm. But, you know, when it's actually doing a wrong action, you know, like people used to tell me in the beginning, oh, why are you vegetarian? You cause so much trouble for other people. You know, they have to do so much extra effort for you. Don't you think you should just eat a little bit of non-veg because, you know, then they don't... And I said, well, you know, I can't. What I have come to feel is a wrong action. I can't do that. You know, I can compromise other little things, but I can't compromise and do something that I feel is actually not a right action. And also, if we're going to be the vanguard, like the ones that are in the front to change the world, we have to stand up to a little bit of this and be a bit of a problem, because we are a problem and then the next one will have less problem, right? And then less problem. Now it's quite easy to get vegetarian food in most places because a few people led the way and made it easier for others now. Now it's so much easier. So we have to also push the bar a little bit.
You talked about
Yeah, yeah.
But it's somehow like, if I just let things as they are, then of course I'm going to be content. But then, is that really the right thing to do, just to stay back and say, well, I want to be content, so I'm not going to fix anything or try to even fix it?
Yeah, that's a very challenging one, especially when you're trying to get something done, you know, and people aren't doing it. And, you know, you can say, oh, well, just let the standard drop, you know. But how much you should let that happen. And you're going to ask something, comment something? So, I mean, also, even on levels of like cleanliness, you know, like I've visited some centers and people say, you know, the sister might say, oh, but it's Baba's home, you know, it's Baba's home. So it's kind of doesn't matter. And I think, well, cleanliness is next to godliness. So just because it's Baba's home, it doesn't mean that everything will be fixed by good vibrations. I mean, germs, I think to a certain extent, might be able to be fixed, but to the most part, no. So it's like, we don't just, some people accept things in that kind of a way too, you know, they just say, oh, well, you know, we're Brahmins, I mean, even dress to a certain extent. I think, you know, like Daddy Janki says, we should dress decent and neat and respectable, you know, and some people go so far on the soul conscious level that it doesn't look good at all, you know. It looks quite disrespectful. You know, like, this is what Nizabai said. One BK, he was wearing jeans to come to one of our Future of Power meetings. And kind of, Nizar wouldn't have it because he said, it's disrespectful to the other guests to come dressed like that. And I thought, yeah, in a way it is, you know, like it's a... how we present ourselves, what effort we put into things like that. Anyway, he went and got a nice set of kurta pajama. But, you know, we have to think about fitting into the world and doing things in an appropriate way. I think this is the word I probably like the most, appropriate. We need to be appropriate in how we behave with people. But yeah, it's a very big challenge how much we drop the standards in a sense of like not making a fuss and just being content, because some people can feel, and we are very much in that problem with our Future of Power programs, because we're trying to, I mean, we're inviting the top people, the cream of each city. So we want to present a certain standard and we think we need to. And when the center, I mean, they often haven't done something at that level and they think, oh, we're so demanding and we're so uncompromising because we're trying to have a certain standard. And yeah, I think it's a very tricky area. Yeah. 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 I was mentioning the other day, you know, that I have been studying a bit of this non-violent communication, and I really need to study more of that, because what I find is that our way of communicating is often not appropriate without realizing it. You know, we put in judgments or comparisons or manipulations in our communication that then, you know, gets a reaction. I'm sure if I could communicate 100% non-violently, 95% would be accepted. But somehow we've got this old stuff, you know, of, you know, judgment or all these things that come into our communication that gets people's back up and gets a reaction. You had a comment, question, something? To compromise? Can you hear? Can you hear? He went to the bathroom and he, of course, wanted to wash his hands, but there was no soap. And he thought, in Daddy's cottage, there must be soap. It's like not possible there's no soap. So then he thought, well, there was a brother there. Should I say anything about that soap? Maybe not. I can manage. It's not the end of the world if I don't have soap to wash my hands. So what happened?
It would be nice to have some soap.
I know exactly what you mean, though, because I'm living in India, you know, and so many places they don't have soap. But I usually ask, you know, can we get some soap? Because it's hygienic, you know, it's hygienic, it's good if we can. And nobody minds, you know, they are quite happy to get some soap usually. So, but I know what you mean. I often think also, should I say anything or not? It's like I'm always demanding something or other, always wanting, you know. Yeah. But I guess it's the mind, you know, the mental state also, not to get disturbed if there's not soap, you know. But yeah, see how we kind of have all these little things, you know, and comfort zones is a very big area of that, because there's no real standard. Everyone's standard in comfort zones is different. So often I feel so demanding living in India. So demanding. You know, it's kind of really embarrassing in a way. But if I compared, and if I ask anyone else to come and do what I'm doing, there's hardly anyone who would adjust to the level I adjust to, you know? So it's like, you know, very challenging all the time to find just the right appropriate behavior and expectation and things. But also it's pushing the bar, you know, we're pushing the bar. You know what that means? Like, you know, going, like getting soap in a bathroom, you know, or in a, you know, next to a wash basin. It's doing this.
So actually, but I think that there isn't any right or wrong answer. It's really subtle. Like, if you really feel like you can't live with it, but you will go for it, but like sometimes...
You carry your soap with you. Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions? We've just got 5 minutes. Comments? So Neetu was sharing with, reminding me of a little thing I shared with her some time ago, and that is just on gratitude. Because I think when Baba's talking about contentment, it's more a state of mind of gratitude. It's not like the ultimate, you know, I've achieved everything, but let me be grateful for what I have. Let me, and that brings a lot of contentment, doesn't it? Being grateful. Huh? An attitude of gratitude, as they say. But just, you know, there's this thing that says there's only one real prayer. What is that? Only one prayer, really. What is that? One real prayer. Thank you. That's the only real prayer. Anything else is asking. The only real prayer is thank you. And when you think about people who are content, they have that attitude. Like, I think you've seen that YouTube that's gone around of a man with no legs and no arms. Yeah, and he lives in gratitude of just being alive and being able to share. He's so happy, no? I mean, unbelievable when you see that face and the way he's sharing with others. And I've met someone who was paralyzed up to their neck. He was like that. I said, I'm going to Hong Kong. Can I get you anything? Oh, no, before I can even think of it, I have whatever I want. He was in such a state of fulfillment and contentment, even though he was paralyzed up to his neck. But it had to have taken a lot of gratitude. He must have been able to go into that, or he cultivated that. Because imagine how many people are doing things for him, because he can't do anything for himself. So you can complain, or you can just thank you. So I think this attitude of gratitude is really the contentment maybe that Baba's talking about, You know, it's our practice and also what we might call a culture. We can create a culture of contentment so that it's something that we practice. So gratitude will help a lot in practicing that. And tolerance also. A lot of contentment just comes from tolerance, you know, and you just kind of say, okay, this is how it is. Like we were saying before, you can't make things as you want them to be. So just a tolerance will bring contentment. So, you know, we can just think of all the content that needs to go in to make us content. And it is the ultimate, it's the final destination, really, to be content. But at least we can cultivate this culture of contentment through gratitude, through tolerance, through being easy-natured, all the eight powers probably we need for this attitude of contentment. Okay, so it's 7 o'clock. I think we'll finish with half an hour meditation. Om Shanti.